Well, I don't know about you, Andrew, but I agree with what Lou Holtz had to say about this week in college football. What do you think?
Well, actually, Will, I disagree.
Oh, you disagree. Well, you know, I'm not really sure exactly what Lou was trying to get across there, but, you know, whether you disagree or agree, I guess it in the end it doesn't really matter. Because it was another fun-filled weekend, depending on who you were, in college football, and there was a, I don't know, Andrew, was the game of the century played this past weekend?
Well, I think you could say the game of the century is played every weekend.
Every weekend, and
yeah.
And some may argue that the game in Tallahassee was yet another game of the century. So, you know, I'm not sure if we need to start putting a limit on the number of game of the centuries that we can have per year. But I think that's the fourth or fifth one this year, so I think that's pretty conceivable though. I think four or five is fine.
Yeah, and I think we have all been maybe short selling Notre Dame a little short. Their offense definitely looked good. Golston, you got to remember, Golston is a quarterback. This is the first time he'd ever lost a regular season game while starting.
Right.
So yeah. You know, that definitely says something about him as a quarterback and about the team that they have done well. You look at the total yards, and one thing I will say is that when you've been winning for a while, it is really inherent in you. You know how to win. You know what you got to do to win. And sometimes you can have maybe be outplayed in some facets of the game, but still win. If you look at the stats here, total yards, Notre Dame had 470 to FSU's 323 total yards.
Right, right.
And Notre Dame had better time of possession and killed FSU on the rushing yard. So it was something that, on paper, if you look at that, you're going to think, well, Notre Dame, they must have crushed them. But the game, as it played out, even though Notre Dame moved the ball a lot, FSU got some stops when they needed to, and then near the end, it seemed like throughout the game, Notre Dame had been trading FSU touchdowns pretty much the entire game. Notre Dame would score, and FSU would hold on or get a stop, and then they'd score. And so it had been, FSU had just been playing catch-up the entire game, score behind, but always maintaining and getting just enough to be able to stay pace for pace. And then there at the end of the game, finally in the fourth quarter, FSU held Notre Dame to a field goal. They couldn't seem to stop them. They couldn't get a punt. Finally were able to hold them, and then FSU got the touchdown to finally go ahead. And I think that that's one of those things where, as a team, you just have been winning for so long, you have that inherent knowing how to win, and the home crowd definitely helped out there, and you were able to, as some say, escape with the win. I don't know what your thoughts are there on the end of the game, Will, about that. There was some definite, you shouldn't have been in that position. You had a 4th and 18, and you let Golston just kind of roam around and get 20 yards for a first down to get in that position. So that shouldn't have been the case. You had a lot of over pursuit, and you just aren't getting a lot of pressure. And something, people want Florida State to be the exact same team they were last year, and they're not. They're a different team, and they don't have the same kind of pressure and the same kind of speed on the defensive ends that they did last year. So I think this is still a good team, but it's unfair to FSU to, when they know that every team that comes to play them is going to give them their best game, it's unfair to believe that FSU is going to blow everybody else out.
Right. And you asked me what I thought about that fourth down play at the end, Andrew, and I'll tell you. Yeah. But first I want to go ahead and introduce myself. My name is Will Patton, and I am joined by
Andrew Brown.
And this, you know, speaking of fourth down plays, this is the Fourth and Short podcast.
So, and it was a fourth and short.
We're all about fourth down. You know, that's kind of our theme here.
Yeah.
Not really, but
it is a theme.
It is a theme, exactly. And of course, you found us at fourthandshort.com, and you can email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com and find us on Facebook simply by searching for Fourth and Short Podcast. And there's two fourth down plays at the end of the game that were really pivotal, you know, potentially turning points in the game. And the first one was there's a 4th and 18 that, and I know you were at the game so you didn't hear the broadcast, but when they converted the 4th and 18, there was a timeout and there was a stoppage, and they were showing the replay of that play again, and the guys in the broadcast kept saying, like, if Florida State wins, you know, ends up pulling this game off, you know, that this play will forever be remembered. Well,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those deals where that's true. If Notre Dame would have figured out a way to win, it would have been forever remembered as, you know, possibly one of the most pivotal plays of the year for Notre Dame. But
sure,
they didn't convert on the second 4th and down, and that one was the most important one. They had gotten to about 4th and 4 or 5.
Fourth and two.
And they ran a you know, instead of running the ball, they ran a play where one of the receivers ran a little out route towards the pylon, and another receiver engaged the cornerback that was on his way to the cover, the one that was running the little out route, and it was a call that you do not see made very often by the officials, but it was a brave call because it was the different. I mean, it at that point when he threw the flag, I mean, he was basically saying, "Nope, Notre Dame, you're not winning it here," because if he hadn't, you know, reached in his pocket and thrown the flag, that would have been game. Notre Dame would have won. There was not enough time in the clock for FSU to do anything with it at that point. So, but it was, looking at the replay, it was the right call. The receiver was engaged in a block too far away from the line of scrimmage,
right,
for that to be. That to be a you know, a legal play.
Legal block, right.
The unfortunate thing for Notre Dame is I do not think that receiver needed to even do that. I think the play was well designed, and if he would have just ran his route instead of engaging that defensive back, I think they would have scored the touchdown regardless. But the flag was thrown, they were pushed back, and they were not able to convert the touchdown on the 4th and long, and that was ball game. So you know, definitely one of the more exciting, not necessarily confrontational. You know, I'm sure there's some Notre Dame faithful that are thinking that's pretty confrontational, but I think at the end of the day, it was the right. It sets up extremely well for Florida State. I think the toughest part of their schedule is now behind them, and if you know, we talk about the college football playoff, and all they need to do is hold serve and win the games that they're supposed to win, and they're in. So
right. So yeah, I agree, and I think, you know, you do have to, like I've said all year long, and once again it showed its face. I'm concerned about the run game at FSU. There just doesn't seem to be a dominant rusher, and last year you had two guys who both could run.
Yeah.
And this year, again, like I said, only 50 yards rushing in this game. That's questionable. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be able to get you all the way through. So you do have some questions still. You're pretty late in the year to have those questions, but this is a team that has persevered. And I think, and I have said this, and I was talking to some people about it, and it's funny to use a illustration of Batman and the Dark Knight and what Commissioner Gordon says, you either die a hero or you hang around long enough to be the villain, and that's
right.
Exactly what happens, is that people now have, Florida State's been around long enough and been on top long enough that people are starting to say, well, you know, we don't want you here.
Right.
This isn't where you're supposed to be, and all of these stories keep coming out. Some of the things I think have validity, and I live in Tallahassee. I will say that these stories that are written in the New York Times that make Tallahassee out to be this hellhole where, you know, people run amok and do vile things all the time, and there's no... I would say New York might be worse than Tallahassee as far as crime, but
I could
be wrong. I don't know.
So we'll edit that out. I don't know if we want to start that kind of fight.
Well, I'm just saying, Will, that I, you know, I do lock my doors at night, but I don't have bars on my windows, and there aren't people, you know, committing, right. you know, crimes on my front lawn. So, I don't know. It's one of those things. We'll see how the season goes on. And Will, I have a couple stats I want to throw out to you, okay, if you mind. Do you mind me throwing some stats?
I don't mind.
Okay. And if there are some people who feel like we haven't talked about FSU long enough, then email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com and you can air your grievances. But I have a few little stats I want to throw out to you. Okay. One team that played a game yesterday, they had 119 total yards of offense, 20 yards passing, 99 yards rushing. They had 11 penalties for 74 yards. Okay?
Okay.
Their opponent, the team they were playing against, didn't have a great game offensively. Also, they had 283 total yards, 148 yards passing, and 135 yards rushing. Now, if you were to guess the final score of that game, what would you say? Where would you say? This sounds like what kind of game?
It sounds like 13-7 type game.
A low scoring defense sounds, yeah, definitely defense.
Yeah.
On this one. Boring, right? A boring game.
A boring game. It's, I mean, if you're only getting a handful over 100 yards of offense and the other team's not even getting to 300, yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot's going on.
Yeah. And which team do you think probably won this one?
You know, you're setting me up here.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
If I were looking at the stat sheet and that's all I had, I would probably say the team that had 280 something yards probably won.
Okay, I can't imagine
winning a game with only 120 something yards.
Let me give you a final score: 42-13.
42-13. So I got the 13 right.
Yep. Yeah, you did.
And I said the 13 was the team that got the 289. Was that the case also?
It was.
Wow. See, I got half of it right. That's pretty impressive.
So, Missouri yesterday beat Florida 42-13 with 119 total yards of offense and 74 yards in penalties.
Wow.
Okay. Florida started the game by kicking off to Missouri, returned for a touchdown. There was a punt returned for a touchdown. There was a fumble recovery returned for a touchdown. Okay? There was an interception.
Yeah.
Yeah. Returned for a touchdown.
Wow. Wow. I know that one of the things that I heard, because this game was a home game for Florida, and there were chants of Fire Muschamp coming from the student section. So
I bring this game to you, Will, because I have been somewhat of an apologist for Will Muschamp. I think he's a decent coach. He coached under Nick Saban. He almost was the head coach at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how he survives this.
Yeah, there's no way.
When the Florida team is boarding the plane for Jacksonville, I'm not sure Will Muschamp is on that plane.
You know, I really don't know. I mean, that's their next game. That's 2 weeks from now. Here's the thing: if you lose that game to Georgia, which they should, they will lose that game to Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he will be around after that game. I think the only way he saves his job in the middle of the season. Now, I'm not even saying saves it for next year. I'm saying the only reason he can save it for the middle of the season is if he beats Georgia.
But if you know you're going to fire him after Georgia and you're going to lose that game anyway, why not go ahead and fire him now to give the team a possible, hey, we're going to wake up and win this game? If you go back, and I don't know if you're aware, but Jeremy Foley, the athletic director at Florida, has been there a long time. He fired Ron Zook when Ron Zook was the head coach in the middle of the season. And basically the rationale was, look, if I'm going to fire somebody at the end of the year, I might as well just do it now. There's no reason to wait. When Ron Zook was fired, they had just lost to Mississippi State And it was the week or 2 weeks, it was right before they played against Georgia in the cocktail party. So this is very similar setting up. I don't think Will Muschamp is there.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think he's gone, and you know, it may be one of those things where we post this podcast and this is old news once it's posted, because you know, could come Monday morning he may already be gone. But yeah, I think when Georgia dismantles them, which they will, I think that will be the final stroke for Will Muschamp. I don't see him surviving that.
This is incredible. It's impossible what is going on at Florida right now. I don't see how you don't have any talent on this team.
Yeah, it really is. It's insane. It's insane. Okay, so we've talked about one big game, you know, game of the century, and then we've talked about one of the maybe most awful games of the century in terms of just ineptness. I mean, I guess it was somewhat exciting with the high score, but it just sounds like a completely inept game all in all. Let's talk about some games kind of that fill in that gap in between. What do you say? Does that sound good to you?
You mean the game of the century for Alabama against Texas A&M?
Yeah, that's one, a good one to go to. So
we can do that in two sentences, Will.
Okay.
Texas A&M is not quite as good as everybody thought. Alabama is probably a little better than everybody thought. They're not number four in the country, however. Three sentences.
I'll add a little bit to that, because, I mean, there's not, I mean, 59-0, I don't know what else you can say besides Texas A&M being really, really not good. Considering that Alabama was almost taken out by Arkansas last week, and, you know, maybe they woke up, I don't know. The interesting stat for me in this game was that when Alabama scored their first touchdown in the third quarter to go up 52-0, they had 52 points. Texas A&M had 51 total yards.
Wow.
So I'm not sure if I've ever seen that late in the game that a team had more points than the other team had yards.
Wow.
So,
yeah. That is.
And, it, you know, you got to believe if they would have left their starters in, then, it, you know, they may have gotten close to 90 in this game. I mean, it was just a complete and total blow. They scored 5 touchdowns in the second quarter. How do you do that? 5 touchdowns in the second quarter. It's insane. It's insane. Okay, next game. Speaking of. Well, let's go back. So, we'll just mention it real quick. Furman, South Carolina. The old ball coach gets things rolling again. They take care of Furman. That bye week really helped them. They win 41-10. Is South Carolina back on track, Andrew?
Well, I still think the defense isn't very good, Will. Just because Texas A&M scores 50 points on you, you know, I just don't think that South Carolina's defense is good. And when you play Furman, it doesn't show. But
right.
They're going to struggle with any team that has a decent offense. And
right.
They're just going to have to outscore them, and I don't know if you can do that every week.
Right, I agree. Okay, another game is Georgia and Arkansas. You know, this game, everybody, I watched College Game Day, and every single one of them picked Arkansas to win, which really surprised me. I couldn't believe it. Everybody picked Arkansas to win this game. Arkansas lost 15 straight. I don't know how you can, you know, we talk about with Mississippi State, and it's hard to pick against them or Ole Miss, because until they prove that they can't win a game, it's hard to pick against them, because they've won every game that they play this season. Arkansas is the exact opposite. Going into this game, they had lost 15 straight. I don't care if they almost beat Texas A&M. I don't care if they almost beat Alabama. They still lost. And they can't prove that they can finish a game. And so going into this game, and I know, Andrew, that you went with the pundits.
Man, I did. They bought me in.
They bought
hook,
you in.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Hook, line, and sinker. And you went with Arkansas in this game. And I just, you know, I thought that it might be a little bit close. And it ended up being, you know, less than 2 scores, but I just knew that Arkansas, they just cannot finish a ball game. And in this game, they couldn't start a ball game. Well, they did. It was actually a pretty impressive drive to open up the game. They had about an 8-minute drive to open up the game. 13 plays, 75 yards, 7 minutes and 51 seconds. And you kind of thought, oh, wow. Like, you know, if they can maintain that sort of control of the clock and control of the ball, then they're going to give Georgia a hard time. Well, then Georgia comes out and they score a touchdown in less than a minute and a half with some big plays and some good passing by Hudson Mason. And then they proceed to score the next 31 points after that. So they scored 38 unanswered points. And they went to halftime 38-6 because Arkansas had their extra point blocked in that, after that first touchdown. And second half, Georgia took their foot off the gas a little bit, and they let Arkansas back into the game. Arkansas scored 4 touchdowns to Georgia's 1 in the second half, but it was too little too late. So Georgia wins it. But Arkansas, it's got to be hard to be an Arkansas fan right now.
Well, you aren't even taking into account that if you're an Arkansas fan, you know Brett Bielema is going to be there for a while because of his ridiculous buyout.
Exactly, exactly.
I have no idea why a school would give him, especially somebody with, it's not like he's Nick Saban.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had a decent career, but he's never won the big game.
Right.
And they gave him a contract where he's one of the top coaches in the country as far as salary. And the buyout, if they were to fire him tomorrow, they still owe him like $18 million.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So you know you're stuck with this guy and he can't win a game.
Yeah. And they have UAB next week. And then after that, they have Mississippi State, LSU, and Ole Miss. I think they lose all 3 of those games.
Yeah, probably
I think their only hope at an SEC win this year will be the last game of the season they play at Missouri. But if they can't pull that one off, then they will they've lost 16 straight. I believe they'll get to 19, and I think it's very possible that they'll lose 20 straight conference games, and that's just unbelievable. Absolutely.
Ooh.
Okay, next game, Andrew. We have, let's see, let me pull it on up here. Ole Miss at Tennessee. Ole Miss takes care of business. You know, we thought for a while early in the season that Tennessee may have had a good quarterback, but man, they couldn't do anything against Ole Miss. They only scored 3 points. 34-3 was the final in this one, and Ole Miss continues to show that they deserve to be in that number 3 spot in the AP and USA Today poll.
Yeah. Once again, here's another one for you, Will. This is a little bit more like what you would expect. Total yards for Tennessee, 191.
Wow.
Mississippi's defense is pretty good. They have a good defensive coordinator, a lot of people think, and he's dialing it up, and they've got enough offense. They've kind of run this thing where it's, hey, we're going to get enough offense and let our defense win it, and that defensive line that they have at Ole Miss is pretty dominant. And I think that they're going to win a few more games. They look like a complete team. And I think part of it is, well, we talked earlier on, just not knowing how they were this good. I think a lot of that defensive line was young, and they've started to mature, and they look good.
Right, right. And the last game, Andrew, was Kentucky and LSU. You know, we had kind of talked up Kentucky a little bit because they'd only lost one game up until this point in the season. And I thought, you know, neither one of us picked Kentucky to win this game against LSU, but I thought it was going to be a little bit of a close game. I know that you said that, you know, thought it might be sort of close, but it was not close at all. LSU wins 41-3, so kind of putting Kentucky in their place a little bit.
Yeah, that's disappointing for Kentucky. Once again, we saw a lot of this last week where there were two teams that statistically weren't even in the same stratosphere. And the same thing, Kentucky only had about 220 yards of offense, and LSU just dominated time of possession, and they had more yards. It wasn't even close. I mean, these two teams were just on a different stratosphere, and I think that's what you're seeing now is the great teams separating themselves from the teams that are just still not there yet.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So that does it, Andrew, for the SEC, and before we talk about the ACC, you know, we talked a little bit offline about this, about, you know, the college football playoff, and we talked a lot about this in the podcast, and What is it going to look like? And it's starting to take shape a little bit. And, Andrew, you look at the AP poll, and you have number one, Mississippi State, number two, Florida State, number three, Ole Miss, number four, Alabama, number five, Auburn. You got four of the top five are SEC. And then you got and you got another one in there, Georgia, at number nine. So you got five SEC teams in the top ten. Andrew, here's what's going to happen. I can tell you, you know, this is on record. It's being recorded. Here's what's going to happen. Florida State's going to win out. They're not going to lose any more games this year. We've already talked about the game of the century against them, Notre Dame. They're the toughest parts of their schedule is behind them. Toughest game that they have left in the year is maybe Miami or Boston College, and then whoever they play in the ACC championship game, who no matter who it is, they're going to beat. So Florida State's they've already clicked their ticket, but there's still three spots in the playoffs. But here's what's going to happen: Mississippi State and Ole Miss, they're going to win every single one of their games for the rest of the year until they get to the Egg Bowl. The loser of the Egg Bowl, I know this sounds crazy, but the loser of the Egg Bowl, they're in. They're in the playoff. I can guarantee you right now, they're in the playoff. They'll only have one loss, and it'll be to either the number one or the number three team in the country. They're in. So the winner that's going to go to the SEC championship game, and they're going to play Georgia. And I don't know how they're going to do it, but Georgia's going to win every single game for the rest of the year. They're going to go in with one loss. Georgia is going to win the SEC championship game. Georgia's in. And whoever loses that game, they're in also. Because you can't send Ole Miss or Mississippi State or whoever loses the Egg Bowl to the playoffs and not send the team that beat them. So you're going to have three teams in there. You're going to have three SEC teams. Mississippi, Ole Miss, and Georgia. It's on. Write it down.
Well, I've said this for a long time. I'm a big proponent of Michigan State. I think Michigan State deserves to be in there. And I think the issue here is...
It doesn't matter if they deserve to be in there. They're not in the SEC, Andrew.
I understand that. I agree with you that is their misfortune for not being in the SEC. But that being said, you put three SEC teams in there. I think what you do, and I don't think that the playoff committee is stupid. They understand that you turn off three-fourths of the country, because at what point does it become irrelevant to play your games? Already we make it where the SEC, you're allowed to lose a game as just a gimme. It's okay. You have that one freebie, and no other conference gets that.
Right.
So you have a freebie if you're in the SEC.
And it
Everybody
doesn't even
else
matter if it's against a bad team. Georgia
doesn't even matter.
Not very good South Carolina team, and they're still sitting pretty at number 10.
Right. Yeah, but if you're TCU, you have one loss to a Baylor team, and you're out. And I think that's ridiculous, because I think TCU very easily can run the table the rest of the way and win the Big 12. So what you end up doing is if you start putting let's say you put three SEC teams in, you alienate a lot of the country, and your teams start to get to the point where you're like, well, what's the point of playing?
What's
the point of playing? Because it doesn't matter. We can't play by their rules if they aren't going to let us in to even have a chance at these SEC teams.
Right.
These SEC teams are supposedly so good. If you won't even let us play them, well, what's the point? I mean, it's not going to happen, but you could see talk of people saying, okay, well, let the SEC team have their own dang league. You know,
yeah.
Just let them play their own thing. They can have their champion, and then the rest of us will play, because we apparently are all on level playing field, and if we're not even with the SEC, why play them every year? Doesn't matter. Let them do their own thing.
Right.
But in all seriousness, the playoff committee, and you have to hold them at their word, they did say winning your championship of your conference is what's going to be a determining factor. So I don't care if you put these teams all in the top three, five. We are conditioned to believe that the SEC teams are inherently just faster, stronger than everybody else. Though, I mean, the NFL Combine, you know, you'd think everybody in the NFL Combine would be SEC players, would be the fastest. I don't understand how that doesn't pan out. But maybe if they actually did the NFL Combine in Alabama, it would be a little different. Here's what I think will realistically happen. I know you're being a little facetious. I do think Michigan State has a good chance to win the Big Ten. And if they win out, I think Michigan State has a chance to be in there, squeak in the 14 playoff.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah. Sure.
Notre Dame, they're obviously, they don't have a conference championship. Are they out?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way Notre Dame gets in?
I mean, I find it unlikely. I find it unlikely.
And you
know what?
I think, because they have the one loss and they don't have a championship game to help them out, to give them that last little push at the end, I think that it's going to make it very, very tough for Notre Dame to ever get into the playoff picture.
Well,
with one loss ever, they're going to have to go undefeated to have a chance to get into the playoffs.
If Notre Dame had almost beaten Alabama, they would still be talk of it. It's the fact that they almost beat a non-SEC team.
Right, right.
FSU, to be competitive in the minds of the pundits, what they spoon feed the audience is, hey, if FSU is good, they will beat all the other teams by 30 points.
Right.
In the SEC, you can squeak by with 3 points, and that's just because you're all that good. But I think Michigan State has a decent chance of getting in the playoff. And I think when it's all said and done, I think that TCU has had a good year, and we'll see what happens there. But I don't know. Michigan State's the only one I would vouch for at this point.
Right. So you think, obviously, the winner of the SEC, Florida State, possibly Michigan State, and either
if I had to do it, if I had to tell you, I think that TCU has a good chance.
TCU, okay.
If they win
the Big 12,
right? If they win the Big 12, I mean, because Oklahoma is good, but
I mean,
they're not great.
The problem is you don't have a championship game in the Big 12 to help you out.
That's true. That is true. But what you're saying about the SEC is that the championship game hurts you, whereas in every other conference it helps you. So
right.
That's,
every other conference, the championship game helps you, but in the SEC, it absolutely hurts you.
Yeah.
So you don't. If you're in the SEC, you'd just rather, you know, you almost want. If you, especially if you're in the West, like if when it comes to the Egg Bowl, if both those two teams are undefeated, you might want to be on the losing side.
Right.
Just saying.
The only team from the Pac-12 that has a chance would be Oregon. Arizona State is 5-1 also, and they, you know, they could win the Pac-12, but I feel like if Arizona State wins out and wins the Pac-12, unfortunately, I feel like they will be on the outside looking in.
Okay, how about this?
Sure.
Let's look at an opposite scenario.
Okay.
Let's say this is a scenario where no SEC teams get in. Okay.
It's impossible.
Okay, no, hear me out.
Okay.
Let's say Georgia, they win the rest of their SEC games except for Auburn. So let's say they lose to Auburn, and just to make it a little bit of a, you know, a nice little dream, let's say Tech beats them too, and let's say they're 9-3, but they still win the East, and they go the SEC championship game with 3 losses. They go to the SEC championship game, and let's just go ahead and say that. You know, go ahead and complete the scenario where Ole Miss,
okay,
just for our audience, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, they're undefeated when they play in the Egg Bowl. One of them wins. Let's just say Mississippi State wins.
Okay.
And they go and play Georgia in the SEC championship game. Georgia beats Mississippi State. Okay. Georgia, yes, they won the SEC, but they have 3 losses.
They're not it.
They're you can't put them in because you're gonna have at least 4 or 5 other teams with 1 loss. You can't put a 3-loss team in, but you can't put Mississippi State in because they just lost the SEC, and you can't put Ole Miss in.
It's a nice idea, Will.
Because
it really
didn't even win the division.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen because Mississippi State's going to win the SEC championship, so it won't matter.
But
it is a nice theory. I understand theoretically what you're saying, but it's not going
to
happen.
If that happened, would the committee dare to not put an SEC team?
No.
Like, let's say Notre Dame doesn't lose any more games. Let's say TCU doesn't lose any more games. Let's say Michigan State doesn't lose any more games. FSU doesn't lose any more games. Like, I feel like you would have to put in Michigan State, TCU, FSU, and Oregon.
No, you'd still put in Mississippi State, I think. That's not going to happen, but you would still put in Mississippi State.
I don't know, man.
Based on the body of work. Based on the body of work.
All right. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the ACC. We've already talked about the game of the century, so we won't talk about that one. But first one up, we got Syracuse and Wake Forest. You know, this one was not played in the Carrier Dome, but we figured that Syracuse was going to be okay playing outside, and they were. They won 30-7. I didn't watch a snap of this game, but good job, Orange.
Well, it's once again, Will, I felt like maybe you would bite there at the beginning. Wake had 170 yards total offense.
Mm.
So we're seeing this again where there are a lot of teams. I mean, I never remember seeing teams with having less than 200 yards of offense, but this is the fourth time we've said it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's definitely, we talk about parity in the league, but there definitely are a lot of have-nots that are struggling offensively out there.
Absolutely. Next game is Virginia at Duke. You know, Andrew, you picked Virginia to win this game.
I did.
I think we all were
hoping.
We were all hoping that Virginia would win this game. But Duke holds on. It's a relatively quiet affair, 20-13. The scoring was well spread out in this game. And you kind of thought that Virginia would have a chance at the end, but they just don't have a quarterback that has the mentality to lead a team back, from 7 points down. They just...
Right.
They had the ball at the end of the game with a chance to tie it, but they just couldn't do it. They don't have the leadership there to do it. And so,
right. It's all about knowing how to win. Well, just like I talked about earlier,
right.
Duke was outgained by 100 yards.
Exactly. And Virginia had one turnover, and you got to figure that that one turnover, kind of could have been the difference in the game. So even though they outgained Duke by 100 yards, it doesn't matter at that point. So very similar stat line to when Tech played Duke. You know, if you looked at the stats on paper, you would say, okay, yeah, Virginia should have won. They had more yards. They had better third down efficiency. They had more first downs. Looking at every single thing, you would say, yeah, Virginia should have won. But nope, at the end of the day, Duke wins. And, Andrew, I'm not sure who's going to beat Duke going forward. I mean, it's very conceivable to say that they could have 11 wins because you look at who they have left, and there's really no one that difficult left. You got Pittsburgh, which they have a bye beforehand, so they should be able to beat Pittsburgh even though they're there. Syracuse isn't that good. Virginia Tech is not that good. And if they don't get their running game fixed – I mean, I know that's several weeks away, but if they don't get their running game fixed, then Duke's going to beat them easily. And then we have Wake Forest to close the season, and right before that you have North Carolina. I think North Carolina might be the only team that can beat them just because of that offense.
Yeah, I think that Duke has got a good chance to go out there with one loss, and they're not going to get any respect because of name. And some teams are able to live on their brand based off of previous years, and so they get pushed.
Now Duke is unranked. How long can Duke stay unranked with one loss?
They got to be ranked after this next week, I think.
After they beat if they beat Pittsburgh 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. I think they crack in there if they win that game. So okay, next game, Andrew, is North Carolina State and Louisville. Now, Andrew, Louisville gave up a few points. They gave up 18 points.
Huh.
So
yeah, woo.
I think their defense is getting a little bit lax there.
Well, I think you might have played down the competition a little bit. It's a home game; you want it. Like you said earlier on, Will, NC State was going to be 4-4. I said you're ridiculous. You were right.
They've lost four in
NC
a row.
NC State, yeah. Yeah, they just haven't. Jacoby Brissett looked great in that FSU game and has been very ho-hum since then. So I don't know what to make of NC State.
Yeah, and they play again in 2 weeks against Syracuse. They might lose that one too.
Yeah, they could. They could. That one will be interesting to see where it goes.
So you know, we talked about Arkansas and their long losing streak in the ACC. What's NC State's up to now?
Same. NC State didn't win a game last year, and they haven't won one yet this year. So
they're 0-4 this year. They lost all eight last year, and in 2012. Okay, they did win their last game of the year, which was against Boston College. So they've lost 12 straight. So yeah, not quite as bad as Arkansas, but still not good.
Still not good at all.
Not good at all. Okay, next game, Clemson at Boston College. You know, Clemson, without Watson, just isn't very good offensively. And I know Boston College has a good defense. They've played well in defense all year long. They're one of the top defenses in the nation. And even though Clemson got almost 400 yards, they only had 17 points. And Boston,
bend but don't break, Will. Bend but don't break.
And Boston College, they had a chance to win the game. They got all the way down to Clemson's goal line, and they couldn't get it in there to win the game. And they had turnover on downs to finish it. So Clemson escaped from Boston College with a win. You know, I think Clemson has a good defense. They've got some good players on offense, but as long as Cole Stout's starting, they're not going to be as dynamic as they should be. So I don't know how long Watson's going to be out, but they're just going to be treading water, I feel like, until he comes back.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Clemson. Their defense is decent, I guess. I just don't know what to make. I'm very unsure of where Clemson is. They seem still pretty young, but you managed to eke out the win, and that's what you got to do. It's a road game, and winning on the road is never easy. It doesn't matter if you're in the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, whatever. Winning on the road is never easy, and without your starting quarterback, you still go in there and win on the road. You got to put your hat off to that.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, that defensive stop at the end, your defense came up when they needed to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a good win. It's not easy to travel 800 miles and play up there. I mean, that's a long trip. And Boston College has played well this year. So, they haven't, you know, they may not have won many games, but they've played well this year. So, it's definitely a big win for Clemson, but they've got to get something going on offense if they want to finish the season strong. Now, they have a couple of easier games their next few games. They play Syracuse, and they play Wake before coming to Atlanta to play Georgia Tech. But if they want to finish, you know, strong and win 10 games, like a lot of Clemson fans feel like they should at this point, they've got to get that offense rolling again.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, last game, Andrew, and I'm glad we saved this one for last. You know, maybe a few of our listeners would have, you know, found better things to do at this point. I mean, it's rare. Once you start listening to the Fourth and Short podcast, it's hard to turn it off.
Really? I always turn it off.
Well, you know, I get, you know, when I listen to it, I just get tired of listening to my own voice.
Yeah, I do. I get tired of listening to your voice, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Ba-dum-tsh!
So, the last game in the list, Georgia Tech at North Carolina. You know, we have a good friend. He's a, I won't say his name, but he's a loyal listener to the podcast. I'm sure he's listening to this. We both got text messages from this gentleman. I guess it was...
Is he up on a bridge right now?
Yeah, I don't know. I hope not. I haven't heard from him.
Don't jump,
yeah. He sent us text messages on, I believe it was Friday, saying that he thought that Georgia Tech was going to blow out UNC. And I read that, and I don't know how you felt about it, but I read it and I was just like, I just can't see that happening. I picked Tech to win, but I figured if they were going to win, it was going to be in a shootout, which it absolutely was. Final score 48-43. And around about halftime, I said to a buddy of mine that I was watching with, it just felt like it was one of those games where whoever had the ball last was going to win the game. And Georgia Tech scored with about 3 minutes left to go ahead. They had a 75-yard run by DeAndre Smelter to go up 43-42. And at that point, I was excited. It was the first time Tech had had the lead since pretty early in the second quarter. But as soon as that, or I take that back, they had the lead at halftime, or a few minutes after halftime. They had it in the third quarter, they had the lead. But as soon as they scored that touchdown, and I looked at the clock and I saw that there were 3 minutes left, I was like, nope, it's over. It's absolutely over, because there was too much time. We could not stop North Carolina. They absolutely owned us on the zone read options that they had, and the short passes absolutely killed us. We couldn't stop them for anything. So even though we outgained them, we had 611 yards. They had 579. Didn't matter. They had too much time at the end of the game. There was a couple. If I were the coach in that situation, and I know you're not supposed to do this with the lead, but I would have gone for the onside kick. I would have gone for the onside kick with 3 minutes left. Because what does it hurt you if you don't get it? They're going to score anyway. Might as well help them score a little bit faster so you can get the ball back and you can have the final possession.
Right. And then why not just blitz everybody every down?
Yeah, just blitz everybody. Hope for a sack or a fumble or something. Let them score. Just let them score. Like,
because they're going to score anyway.
They're going to score anyway. Let them get a huge play and then put the, you know, the control back in your hands so you can do what you do best, which is dominate the clock. You had all three of your timeouts. You know, it's one of those things where you're not supposed to do it. You're never supposed to let the other team score. But in a situation like that, I felt like it would have been the smart thing to do. So, you know, Jackets lose. They lose two in a row. It's frustrating. You know, you beat two teams that you haven't beaten in a while in Virginia Tech and Miami. And then you lose two games to teams that you've dominated for the past, you know, 5 to 10 years. So it's very, very frustrating. I don't know what to make of this team. I think the offense is great. Tech has a lot of great things going for them with the offense, but the defense is just plain bad. And, you know, we say it every year, Andrew, and I'm going to say it again this year. Can defense get any worse? You know,
yeah.
You
constantly think it can't get any worse.
It can't get any worse.
Somehow.
Yeah, so you feel like next year, like, you know, it can't get any worse. It's got to get a little bit better, you know. So next year, like, as long as the offense keeps playing, but you know what? They keep doing the same thing over and over.
It gets worse. I mean, it's definitely worse. I think that this is, I don't know. See, here's my thing, is that in 08 and 09, you had a fairly bad defense. Okay,
but you had
at the beginning
some good
players. Of 08.
You had guys like Derek Morgan and Morgan.
Right.
Burnett.
You had
some guys that could make some plays.
Make the plays. And at the end of the game against Clemson, the same thing happened where you scored too quickly.
Yeah.
But the defense made the play because you had at least one or two players on that defense to make a single stop.
Right.
It was we could make one stop. And this defense, name one player on that defense who's going to be starting at another ACC school. I mean,
Gotsis, maybe. Yeah. Maybe Gershon Neely. And, you know, maybe Jamal Golden. But
maybe three guys.
Maybe three guys.
And you put maybes in front of all three of them.
Well,
now,
I think Gotsis is an absolute. I think Gotsis.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I think Gotsis is
Neely,
good. Now, also,
and Neely probably starts at maybe a third to a half of the ACC schools.
Freeman is a great player, but most every other school, he's behind the senior that's in front of him.
Right.
So that's your problem there. Now, what I would say is that we keep saying it can't get any worse. But it is, because you just aren't recruiting any defensive talent. And the players that you're recruiting on defense are not making it to the field. In the offseason, how many guys on defense? You just lost pretty much the entire defensive front. Was kicked out of school or flunked out. Well, nothing good happened. And so you knew it was going to be rough. In 2009, you won the ACC. You had a, I would say, fairly comparable defense. You just got lucky in that you got the ball last.
Right.
This is a team that this game, you had a screw up against Duke, but we would have a completely different conversation is if by some crazy circumstance that one play with Smelter there at the end didn't go for 75 yards and he got knocked out of bounds at the 45 and Georgia Tech scores with 14 seconds
you win
to
the
go,
game.
Then they win.
Yeah, you win. I mean, it's almost like that big play hurt you, and which is so unfortunate. Like, you know, when he was running down the sideline, I was almost like, just go, step out of bounds, something.
But, yeah, and this goes against everything you do as a coach, but you got to wonder, at some point, if you get into another shootout like this, at some point, do you, as a coach, start thinking, well, maybe we should start going onside kicks? They're going to score anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get one.
Oh, well, you know,
if
we did
onside kick it three or four
we
times.
We did it in the third quarter. We scored our first touchdown in the third quarter. We came back and did the onside kick.
Did we really?
We did, and we almost got it. It was a great onside kick. They caught the... You know, they didn't set up for the onside kick. They kicked it like, you know, they set up like a normal kickoff. And they caught the guys, the North Carolina players up front off guard. But when it went down for its last bounce, it just, you know, it bounced the wrong way. It bounced right into a North Carolina player's arms. You know, you get a lucky bounce there, you get the ball back. But, you know, it's just, how has it been in these last two games? The ball just hasn't bounced in the right direction. So, it's just another example of that.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't get the bounce.
You didn't get the bounce, yeah.
I still think, you know, at the beginning of the year, I think I might have said it was 8-14. I still think it probably
is.
Yeah,
I think 8-4 is would be pretty reasonable. I think, you know, you look at the next few games. Pittsburgh, I think we can beat Pittsburgh. Virginia, they got a good defense, but I think it's going to take good offenses to beat us. And then with NC State, you know, they had a good game against FSU, but they haven't looked good since. So I think Tech has a better than reasonable chance in all three of those games. With Clemson, it depends on who's at quarterback. If Watson is right, healthy and he's back, then and even though that game's in Atlanta, that's just going to be a tough one, I think, for the Jackets to pull off. And at Georgia, I don't think I can ever pick Tech in that game. It doesn't matter if Georgia's 0-11 going into it. I mean,
well, not with this defense, that's for sure.
Not with this defense. So,
one thing I would like to say, we'll throw some stats out. In ACC play, Georgia Tech is allowing quarterbacks to complete something like 75% of passes. I mean, that's incredible to me. I have no idea how that's possible. Also, defense is ranked, I believe, 70th or 71st in the 70s, which is bad, but doesn't tell the full story. If you go with yards per play, Georgia Tech gives up about 6.4 yards per play. And that's at 110th.
Right.
So when we talk about it can't get much worse, it literally cannot get much worse. You're down there with Louisiana Monroe and Tulane, two schools that are not winning many games,
right.
Where your defense is. And the last one I would like to throw out is your offense is averaging a 3-and-out in about 6.5% of all of their possessions.
That's incredible.
That's first in the country.
I mean, that's
incredible. That means you're never going 3-and-out.
Yeah.
Sounds great, except that your defense is giving up a 3-and-out, or getting or obtaining a 3-and-out, I guess, 7.5%
which
of all
means
of the series.
They're never getting 3-and-outs.
Never getting 3-and-outs. You might get 1 3-and-out every couple games.
Yeah.
So it basically just is a wash. It evens out, which is kind of where we're at. So you have to start making a point to, you've got to have more talent on defense. And I think some of it is you had some bad luck, but you have got to have better players on defense. And until you get that, it doesn't matter. If you let a quarterback sit back there long enough, they're going to find somebody.
Yep, and that's what they're doing every single time. They have all day. Well, Andrew, I hate to end on that note, but, you know, I guess that, you know, it can't always be happy times, I guess.
Well, it's not always. The end of the world as we know it.
Yep, there you go.
But I feel average.
I feel fine.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's a podcast. Andrew, thanks for joining me. My name is Will Patton. I've been joined by...
You just said it, Andrew Brown.
This is the Forward and Short Podcast, forwardandshort.com. Email us at forwardandshortpodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, find us on Facebook, Forward and Short Podcast. Thank you for listening, and have a great day. Bye.